email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, I'm joined in the studio by Professor Donica O'Brien, consultant neurosurgeon and clinical director of the neurosurgical department at Beaumont Hospital. Good afternoon, Donica.
Thanks, Ray.
And people might have seen you on the telly last night because Brain Doctors started on Virgin Media 1. You allowed cameras into Beaumont Hospital so people could see what you do on a daily basis. And because you're the boss man, obviously you were involved in that decision. Yeah. Why did you say yes?
Thanks very much for having me on, Ray. We were approached by the team maybe about 2 years ago with regard to this, and we were delighted to be involved because I thought it was a fantastic opportunity to showcase the brilliant work that we do in Beaumont. The neurosurgical department, and indeed all of Beaumont Hospital, is a wonderful institution and does amazing work for patients right throughout the year. And I think maybe we don't get enough acknowledgement of that. And I think, people think that neurosurgery, centres abroad are maybe better than us. But I can assure you and your listeners that the neurosurgical department of Beaumont and Beaumont Hospital in general is a fantastic institution. And I thought it was a great means to showcase that.
Mm. Yeah. And I watched the first episode and you do spectacular work.
Yeah.
Like brain surgery, like even the fact that it's in common parlance up there with rocket science, it's not brain surgery.
Yeah, it takes a bit of getting used to, and I suppose it takes a lot of training in that. And I suppose the one thing about neurosurgery, it takes a lot of determination. I think you've got to be very determined to do it. But it's extremely rewarding and it's very engrossing and all of that, but it's a fantastic thing.
So how did you, was it something you always wanted to be?
Yeah, when I was a medical student, I wanted to do cardiothoracic surgery. I went to college in UCC, but then I interned in neurosurgery and I became fascinated with it. I had two fantastic consultants, Charlie Marks and the late Ted Buckley, who's just recently died actually, and they were wonderful people. And I suppose there's a human aspect to it as well, and they're wonderful human beings. Mm. And the whole thing was so interventional and so fantastic for patients.
Like our brains are the essence of who we are.
They are, yeah.
You know, like another organ, you can sort of, you can have a heart transplant now.
Yeah.
Any other of the major organs. But the brain, it's the essence of humanity, of being a human.
Thought and,
yes.
And all of that and emotion. And I suppose what we try to do is to, certainly with regard to brain tumours and epilepsy surgery, is to not operate on eloquent brain, not operate on functional tissue. Areas that we remove are usually have no function. So we confine ourselves to that. So we don't remove normal brain tissue for the sake of creating space or around a tumour or whatever. We just confine ourselves to the tumour.
Can you remember the first time you witnessed, the skull had been removed and seeing a living human brain for the first time?
Yeah, I think I was an intern with Ted Buckley in 1991. I think Mr. Buckley had a big meningioma case and I was assisting him with the case, and absolutely fantastic. It's incredible stuff. And I'd encourage anybody who's an up and coming doing their leaving cert to come and see us and visit us. Many medical students come and see us and visit us. It's a fantastic career.
So the essence of who we are. We see Katie, who's a patient of yours, and Katie has epilepsy that's not responding to drugs.
Yeah.
30 seizures a day.
Yeah.
She's a young, bright woman.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to change her life.
Absolutely. And I suppose the thing about it is that, what we refer to there is that thing called drug-resistant epilepsy. That's not without its own consequences, in that there's mortality associated with that. So obviously we need to stop the seizures, but we need to save her life as well in terms of avoiding a sudden death from epilepsy, falls, loss of airway and that. And unfortunately, medication can't stop approximately 30% of patients who have seizures, and those 30% of patients have to be considered for surgery.
Right.
And you know, as I said, it's not like destructive surgery. It's very planned and very prepared and very thought out surgery. And it's so we're removing abnormal tissue. We're not removing tissue that's normal, or we're not removing tissue that's involved in thought or memory or emotions or whatever.
How do you know in that case? Because a tumor is obviously a tumor, so it's a growth, so it's there. But in the case of epilepsy, does the brain tissue responsible for the seizures look different?
It does. It can be scarred, or it can be shrunken, or it can be dysplastic. And we would do a whole battery of tests beforehand in terms of assessing the patient's memory with a neuropsychologist, and they can tell us whether the patient has functional memory there or not. And we would do preparatory scans like motor mapping scans and diffusion tensor imaging, which can tell us where the tracks of the motor system are in relation to what we think is the seizure focus.
Yeah.
So it's extremely thought out and extremely planned. And we're not in the business of injuring people. We're in the business of just controlling the seizures and preserving what we refer to as eloquence. So we preserve eloquent tissue and we remove tissue which has no function, which as the grandmother of one patient from Wexford once said to me, it's tissue which is more than useless, in that it's tissue which is causing seizures and contributing to
more
no
than
function.
Useless.
Yeah.
How much do we know about our brains?
We know very little. We know that the left side moves the right side, the right side, that's about it. I think the brain is a fascinating organ. As you say, we're only just beginning to find out about it. I think the biochemistry of the brain, you know, there's quantums of information that needs to be found out about that with regard to mood and all the various emotions and all that, and it's the effects of that. You know, people talk about, you know, say the endorphins and exercise and all that. But that's so basic, isn't it, in terms of, and also in terms of pharmacology. You know, it's very, very simplified, and I think we need to invest heavily in the whole biochemistry.
For example, when you have a few jars, you're disinhibited.
Yeah,
I know you don't drink. But that's a drug we ingest affecting our brain.
Yeah.
Do we know why that happens?
It has a dampening effect on the higher cortical functions.
Right.
So the higher cortical functions are removed from the thought processes then. So that's why people are disinhibited. It's the quiescence of a higher cortical function, which then results in disinhibition. But as you say, I mean, the actual steps through which that happens are practically unknown, you know, the biochemical pathways. And in terms of, you know, highly malignant brain tumours, again, the biochemical pathways which cause that malignancy are very ill understood.
And there's no, oddly, I find this every time I hear it, there's no sensory cells in the brain, as in there's no touch, you know, it can't experience touch. Is there?
Although there is, yeah.
Oh, there is.
The parietal cortex behind the central sulcus, that's the sensory area.
No, but if I was to remove a bit of your skull and touch your brain.
Oh, yes, I see what you mean. Yeah, the brain itself is anaesthetic.
It's anaesthetic, right.
But the lining
of
the brain.
So the brain is numb.
The brain is numb, has no. So we can do away craniotomies and we can remove tissue of the brain and the patient doesn't feel anything. But the lining of the brain around it, the dura mater, that is anaesthetic.
Right,
and we got to be careful because doing an away craniotomy case, if you would say irrigate fluid over the lining of the brain, that can become very painful for the patient.
But you're
correct, yeah, the brain is anaesthetic.
It shows you going, you know, putting your scrubs on and washing your hands and all that sort of thing, and going through the door of the operating theatre.
Yeah,
and you say you have to leave emotion
behind. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a demanding specialty and you got to kind of focus on it and you got to get the job done, you know.
How long is the average operation?
It depends on the case, but average maybe about 3 hours.
Okay.
Yeah, craniotomy would be about 3 hours, maybe 45 minutes to kind of get in there, and maybe a couple of hours to do the case, and then half an hour, 45 minutes to close up then.
And have you operated on somebody who's not under general anaesthetic?
Yeah, we do. We do away craniotomies in Beaumont all the time. To my point about how brilliant Beaumont is, we did a case on a young man from Derry there just a couple of weeks ago, Conan, who's done really well, thankfully. But yeah, we do it all the time.
And the reason for doing that is?
Because you want to monitor function, just going back to what we were saying about not damaging function. So awake craniotomies are done whereby, say, the tumour is near the speech centre.
Okay.
So you can't assume that the tumour has no speech function. So what you want to do is, where the tumour is and in and around where the tumour is, map the speech function by doing brain mapping with the patient awake. And then once you've confirmed where the speech centre is, then you can go ahead and remove the tumour. And as you're removing the tumour, the patient is talking, so that gives you more reassurance as to the function.
I'm sorry, I feel slightly...
There's no damaging people here.
But the fact that Conan was chatting to you while he knew that a bit of his skull is gone and you have...
It's incredible. We had a visiting neuropsychology student from Belgium with us, and she was completely blown away by it. But it's actually... It gives me as a neurosurgeon more power is the wrong word, but more confidence then as the patient is talking. So we know we're not damaging function.
Power, so, confidence. Confidence is hugely important, I would imagine. You can't doubt yourself in any way.
No, there's no doubt here.
How do you cope with that as a human being? Because surely self-doubt is part of being human.
Yeah, I think a very good trick is the wrong term, but a very good way is to prepare well for cases, you know. Just, you know all about the scans, you know all about the information, you know all about the patient's history. Kind of going in kind of lazy into a case, that's food, that's a recipe for disaster.
How many surgeries have you done?
Over the years, I've been doing, I don't know, 15 or 16,000.
Right.
Know? Yeah, I suppose 500 cases a year maybe.
Yeah. So it's like, you know that thing, I remember going under the knife or something and the anaesthetist said to me, don't worry now, Ray, this is routine.
Yeah.
And I felt like saying, it's routine for you, but it ain't routine
again,
for me.
Yeah, again, it's a neurosurgical thing, you know, whereby you can't assume anything to be routine.
Because
the stakes are so high that if you have a kind of everything's going to be okay kind of attitude, it won't be, you know. So you need to focus on the cases, and you got to expect the unexpected as well.
And do you have to retire at a young age? Is that mandatory?
No. With my colleague Stephen Young, he retired last year. He was 67, 68. Right. Yeah, that kind of age.
Now I read a couple of weeks ago that you got a new computer in to help in certain types of surgery, but you're looking for another one.
Yeah, we have a new hybrid theatre in Beaumont, which allows intraoperative angiography. But
now you see, there you go. So this is a machine that can take scans during the operation.
During the case, yes. We have an angiogram machine which does angiograms during the case, whereby it's my vascular colleagues, they deal with an AVM or an aneurysm, and as they're dealing with it, they can just do an angiogram during the case.
Right,
and it's fantastic.
So you want a similar thing for
brain tumours, yeah. What we're looking for is a machine called an intraoperative MRI, which allows us to do an MRI scan during the case. So say, going back to our tumour, say our awake craniotomy case, say we think we've removed it all, but we're not 100% sure, then we can just close the wound temporarily and then bring the patient for a scan across the way, and then it'll confirm whether there's a bit left or whether it's all gone, and then bring the patient back and do whatever we need to do then at that stage.
Because in removing a tumour, sometimes the tumour is at a really sensitive part of the brain. So is that...
Yes. And I suppose the more we remove, or if we remove all of it, the better the patient's prognosis.
Yes.
So if you have a patient who's 100% removal of a grade 2 glioma, they have a better prognosis than somebody who's maybe 80 or 90% removed.
This is a difficult question to answer, I'd imagine, Donica. And I don't know how much you've examined this in your quiet moments, of which you have very few because you're on 24/7 call. But knowing what you know, like the brain and... Mm. The answer to why we're here and the meaning of life and does that...
I'm not the one to ask that.
Yeah, you're not, no. You haven't thought about that.
No, I'm pretty straightforward. That's a very deep question.
Are you religious?
I am religious, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But...
And does that help you?
It does, yeah. It gives you strength, yeah. Yeah, you need strength. You need strength to fight for the people, you know. Fight for your patients.
Hmm. And would prayer be part of your preparation for surgery?
It would on occasion, yeah. Mm. Yeah. The high risk, people's lives are in your hands. You know, you got to have a quiet moment to yourself. and kind of hope that they'll do well and give everything you have for the patient. And if prayer is part of that, if prayer is part of giving hope and doing a better job, well, so be it, you know.
Mm. It's an album because to do your best, you have to care, and then caring too much could be...
I don't think you can care too much.
Can you not?
No, I don't think so. I think it's all part of doing your very best, you know. You got to fight hard for the patients and give it everything. And that's the whole spirit of medicine. And that's one of the great things about Beaumont. And Beaumont really battles for the patients, the doctors, the nurses, the porters, everybody pulls together. Beaumont was brilliant during COVID, as indeed all the other hospitals were. But everybody battled. The intensive care in Beaumont is fantastic, you know. Yeah.
I was reading your interview with Andre Smith in The Independent, and what they picked out of the chat was your attitude to drink. Yeah. Why do you think that was the case?
I don't know. I suppose I've strongly held views on it. I've just worked in neurosurgery for 30 years. I've seen the devastation that it causes in terms of the effects of car accidents, drink driving, and assaults, fighting. You know,
this isn't the effect that drinking has on your brain. It's actually the things that happen as a result of drink.
Yes, it is. Yeah, and I suppose it does have an effect on the brain as well. You know, I mean, you know, several people talk about you know, dementia and pre-senile dementia, but the kind of convenient thing that everybody avoids is the effect of alcohol on that. Mm. Alcohol does cause cortical atrophy. It does cause dementia. Yeah, and people seem to kind of gloss over that. People seem to be afraid to acknowledge that, which I think is a shame, you know. And
is that because of the culture we live in?
I suppose it is. It is society, is it? And the vested interests which support it and that. And, you know, people talk about, I mean, you've just spoken eloquently there about the neuropharmacology of the brain and that. But alcohol destroys brain cells. Every time anybody has a heavy bout of alcohol drinking, well, it destroys hundreds of thousands of neurons, and people don't seem to be able to accept that.
I haven't heard that in a long time. I used to hear that all the time when I was younger.
Absolutely, 100% true.
Yeah.
You know, like heavy bouts of alcohol at a time. I think there's something like 16 billion neurons in the brain, but every time somebody has a very huge amount of alcohol, it'll wipe out 100,000 of those.
You mentioned dementia there. Mm. Does a person's brain with dementia look different to a person without dementia?
It does. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And we're learning more about that.
The brain is smaller.
Right.
It's shrunken down because of neuronal loss.
Right.
So alcohol and various other drugs cause neuronal loss and cause the brain to shrink down, you know?
Can you extend my gratitude and sheer admiration for all neurosurgeons and their teams at the Beaumont Hospital? They are amazing. I watched the show last night with great interest, but somewhat squeamish with the level of skill involved dealing with such a delicate area of the body. Wishing everyone involved in the show all the very best for the future. I hope I never need to attend the Beaumont Hospital, but I'm assured that I will be taken care of to the highest level, says Orlan Mayo. And neurosurgeons are a different breed of human being. I'd watch brain surgery anytime. I'm totally in awe of their intelligence, says Maeve. And Dunnock O'Brien is such a gent. He operated on my brain while I was awake a couple of years ago. What a gentle, kind man.
Yeah, that's very nice. It's very pleasant.
That's nice. A very intimate act, isn't it?
Yes.
It's like, but people are surrendering to you.
Yeah. And then you spoke about concentration and focus. Yes. You have to have that in these circumstances.
And what do you do to relax, Dunnock?
I love exercise. I love running. I used to read a lot, but I gave that up. I don't have time to read anymore. So,
and you're the doctor for the
Dublin Hurlers. Yeah, I've gone back to the Dublin Hurlers recently, but I love that.
And how do your mates in Cork feel about that?
Oh, I tell you, my dad hung up the phone.
Did he really?
Yeah, he found out. He's not too impressed with me. So
Did you volunteer for that, or did they come knocking?
Well, Niall O'Callaghan rang me a couple of weeks ago, so. I'm good friends with Ray Finn, the kit man of the Dublin team. I used to be Pat Gilroy's doctor a few years ago, but who's a lovely man. He rang me, so I couldn't say no.
And you played club level in Cork?
I played with the Glen in Cork, yeah.
Right, okay. There'll be a good bit of slagging now if you're on the sideline. I had the left temporal lobe surgery in 1996 to control seizures that I've been having since 17. It was very successful. I actually work in an operating theatre for the past 25 years. Thank God I'm able to drive, climb mountains and live a normal life. I'm just very careful with strobe lighting and don't drink alcohol, says Caroline in Donegal.
Mm-hmm.
Professor O'Brien and the team at Beaumont Hospital are wonderful. Saved my life. It's a privilege to be treated by such exceptional professionals in a centre of excellence. We're lucky to have them in this country. I'm so grateful, Sarah. What you said to me upstairs when I went to meet you was that you're a very skilled, focused, yeah, passionate group of people and you don't have time for politics and lobbying.
Yeah, we do. We don't seem to have a huge kind of political backers and that. We have a very good CEO, Ms. Coyle, and a chairman of the board, Ms. Phillips, who seem to do it for us both. We seem to be busy all the time operating, looking after people and doing the things that you said, focus, concentration, getting in there, doing the very best we can, giving it everything kind of thing. But we certainly need a big new neurosurgical neuroscience centre in Beaumont. And Irish people shouldn't be second best to other people or as good as anybody else. And we need as good services that other institutions like those in New York and Paris have. So there's no reason why we shouldn't have all of that. And my mantra at the moment is double the beds, double the theatres. That's what we need in Beaumont. And we absolutely need an intraoperative MRI. I mean, if you were been operated on, Ray, and if I said to you, well, yeah, look, an intraoperative MRI does make that 10% of a difference, what would you say? You'd take it.
Yeah.
And for the sake of a few million euros to build it and run it, well, why not?
And you mentioned 10% there, and because a lot of medicine is about percentages, isn't it?
It is. It's about prognosis and it's about removing as much of the low-grade glioma as possible.
How do you communicate that? You know, so somebody's going in for surgery, and you were saying, I think, to Katie, you know, just before she said, you said that, you know, there is a possibility of death or stroke, but it should be okay. Yeah. You have to say that, do you?
You have to say you can't petrify people going in. You know, you gotta.
But you still have to say it.
Yeah. I suppose medical legally, we talk about risk and that, and but I suppose if you think about it, if I say to Katie, well, there's a 1-2% risk of death and stroke. Well, it means that it's going to be okay. You know, statistically. And you have to. I mean, mention that. But what I personally tend to do is I mention that, but then the very next sentence is, you know, everything is going to be okay and I'm going to take care of you and, you know, I'm going to make sure it's fine.
Yeah.
But that making sure it's fine goes back to what you were saying earlier, Ray, of, you know, you need to completely focus and
you need to use your words, on the ball.
You need to be on the ball. And completely focused means bringing the things that you mentioned along with you and the various psychological ploys along with you to do the case, you know.
Yeah. Between 2021 and March 2024, 57 beds were delivered at Beaumont Hospital. It is planned to deliver 232 beds at Beaumont Hospital under the expansion plan from March 2024 to 2031. This must be the statement, is it? This makes for an overall total of 289 beds planned to be delivered at Beaumont Hospital over the period from 2021 to 2031.
Well, we could do with some of them.
What?
Well, I'd like to see some of them, you know. Please give us those beds. You know.
Yeah. Well, there we.
We'll
print that off for you.
Yeah, well, I'd like to see. I'd like to see that.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes,
but
yeah,
please give us those beds. Well, we have. I'm the clinical director, so we have about 90 ward beds. We don't have a HDU. We have
high dependency unit. Yeah.
Yeah, we don't have that. We have 10 of our own ITU beds. We have access to general ITU into which we overflow all the time. The figures are, we need 140 floor beds. We need a 25 bedded HDU. We need at least 30 to 35 intensive care beds. We have 3 operating theatres. We need double of those. 6 we need.
And you also need somebody to take up your case because you are too busy saving lives, to go and lobby for what you've just mentioned.
We need some SEAL team leader out there, maybe like yourself, Ray, who could represent it. We've started a little fundraising campaign with Beaumont Fundraising, and we've had a few very prominent individuals come and give us a hand. Kieran McGeaney, the Armagh manager, was down last week. He's a lovely man. The Armagh football manager, Kieran, he came down. And Brian Fenton,
If there's anything I can do for you, I'm here. You have my number now. Dr. Brian operated on my young daughter during COVID. He gave her back her life. Epilepsy had taken the little girl we knew and loved away for so long. Her 10 failed epilepsy meds and the side effects were heartbreaking. Now my little girl is herself again, wild and wonderful. Thank you from a family in you all.
That's drug-resistant epilepsy. So that man he defines drug-resistant epilepsy in what he says there. That kind of term doesn't come, it's kind of difficult, people, drug-resistant epilepsy, but that's what is meant. I 10 to 15 different drugs.
Yeah. And none of them work really. Yeah.
And that's that 30% of patients. Right. So.
Brain Doctors, it's on Virgin Media One, and they have full access to Dunica's department, the neurosurgical department at Beaumont Hospital. And it's a real eye-opener to what your patients go through and the suffering out there, but also the brilliant work that you do to bring them to the other side and give them a life back.
So we were delighted to do it. As I said, it was our intention to showcase the wonderful hospital that Beaumont is and that neurosurgery within it is also. And we just need extra facilities. We need extra gear. And why not?
Yeah.
And why not?
Why not is right.
Yeah.
Dunica, thanks so much.
Okay, yes,
lovely
sir.
to meet you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We'll take a quick commercial break.
Thank you.